Today is Monday, October 25th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu for broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, US-EU condemn coup in Sudan.
EU is very concerned about Sudan's military forces reportedly putting Prime Minister Hamdok under house arrest.
Plus, President Biden inches closer to an infrastructure deal.
It sounded like that was a productive breakfast. That is what the White House said, that it was a productive breakfast, that a lot got done, and that they're close to a deal.
Also, Afghan women called for pressure on the Taliban to respect rights. Our top story today is in Sudan. Josep Borrell, the European Union's foreign policy chief, said Monday he was following events in Sudan with the utmost concern. At a news conference in Brussels, his spokesperson Nabila Masrali added that, quote, violence and bloodshed must be avoided at all costs, unquote. Soldiers arrested most of the members of Sudan's cabinet on Monday, and the military dissolved the transitional government, while opponents of the takeover took to the streets where gunfire and injuries were reported. Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok was detained and moved to an undisclosed location after refusing to issue a statement in support of the coup, according to the Information Ministry, still apparently under the control of Hamdok's supporters.
EU is very concerned about Sudan's military forces reportedly putting Prime Minister Hamdok under house arrest, and as well as detaining other members of the civilian leadership, and we urge for their fast release. We have seen also the reports of cuts of telephone and internet in Sudan. We urgently call for unrestricted means of communication to reach those in need. Violence and bloodshed must be avoided at all costs. As the broader region faces multiple challenges, protecting Sudan's historic transition has become more acute than ever. All stakeholders are expected to implement the different aspects of the Constitutional Declaration and the Juba Peace Agreement in good faith and with continued spirit of collaboration for the benefit of the Sudanese people who deserve and wish for peace, legitimate peace, stability, and economic development.
That's Nabila Masrali, spokesperson for the European Union's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell. The United States says the leaders of the military coup in Sudan are undermining the country's transition to democracy and should, quote, stand down, unquote. The U.S. Embassy in Sudan said on Twitter Monday it was, quote, gravely concerned, unquote, after Sudan's leading general declared a state of emergency and dissolved the ruling body that had been jointly overseen by military and civilian leaders. French President Emmanuel Macron has added his voice to the growing global concern over the military coup in Sudan. Macron said France supports the transitional government that had been tasked with steering Sudan towards democratic elections. He also called for the, quote, immediate release, unquote, of Sudan's prime minister and other civilian leaders who have been detained. Turning to the United States, President Joe Biden spent hours Sunday at his home in Delaware with two pivotal senators as they seek to resolve the disputes over the Democrats' wide-ranging social safety net and infrastructure bill. The White House calls Biden's time with Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and West Virginian Democrat Joe Manchin a, quote, productive, unquote, meeting. But no deal has yet been announced. Biden is pressing for progress he can spotlight to world leaders at overseas summits that gets underway this week. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says she expects an agreement on a framework by week's end. For more on how the talks will shape the infrastructure bill, I spoke with VOA's White House correspondent Anita Powell.
It sounded like that was a productive breakfast. That is what the White House said, that it was a productive breakfast, that a lot got done, and that they're close to a deal. What we do know is that Senator Joe Manchin's big point of departure with the rest of his party was over a $150 billion clean electricity program. And that is because his state of West Virginia is pretty prevalent in the coal market. There are about 14,000 coal workers in West Virginia out of a population of about 1.8 million. But even so, that's a concern for Joe Manchin. He wanted to be seen to be voting his constituency, as we say. That's kind of what the holdup was.
Do you know of any outcome of that meeting or a timeline as to when something concrete will actually happen?
Anybody who's guessing at timelines, even Nancy Pelosi, has been wrong a few times this month, so I wouldn't hazard a guess about when. But what we are hearing from the White House is they do hope that this can happen this week.
Some progressive members of the Democratic Party are enraged at what they see is some kind of an obstruction by Senator Manchin. How is that shaping up? Is this a problem within the Democratic Party?
So there was a little bit of fuss last week when Joe Manchin said, fine, if I'm not going to get on with the rest of my party, I will leave my party and be an independent. Allegedly, that's what he said. And there were members of his party that welcomed that and said, fine, leave the party, become an independent. But that seems to have blown over. Whatever was actually said by Manchin and by everybody else seems to have blown over, and he is staying with the Democrats. I think we have to recognize that the two parties that we have in this country are kind of broad churches. We have people of all sort of persuasions and opinions, even within these parties. They're not as tightly disciplined as we see in countries with parliamentary systems. This is part of the, as White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki would say, this is part of the legislative sausage making. This is part of the process to have a little bit of disagreement, because, you know, we have 50 very different states that all have representatives who are ostensibly fighting for their states first and foremost. And so this is bound to happen.
The president appears to be throwing in a lot of political capital into this reconciliation bill. How politically dangerous is that if the president fails to deliver?
This is the signature item that Joe Biden wants to achieve in his first year in office. So if he doesn't deliver on this in any form, if he doesn't even deliver the, we're now hearing it might be $1.75 trillion for the reconciliation bill, if he doesn't deliver anything, that will obviously be a blow. That's not how the White House is going to paint it. They're going to say, well, this is legislative sausage making. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, and point to other pieces of legislation that were just as contentious and that failed for other reasons. This could weaken, I suppose, the Democratic Party, but it just really remains to be seen.
That's VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell speaking with me from Washington. U.S. intelligence officials are issuing new warnings about China's aim to dominate advanced technologies. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
From artificial intelligence to other technologies, the officials warn Beijing's ambitions could eventually give it a decisive military edge and possibly dominance over essential sectors like healthcare. The National Counterintelligence and Security Center notes Chinese companies are investing in U.S. and European biotechnology and pharmaceuticals. Its acting chief notes such companies are beholden to the Chinese Communist Party, and Beijing could ultimately end up with any data they collect. The center is boosting efforts to tell business executives, academics, and government officials about the risks of accepting Chinese investment or expertise in key industries. Sagar Magani, Washington.
North Korea's recent ballistic missile tests were, quote, concerning and counterproductive, unquote, for the efforts to reduce tensions, and Pyongyang should instead engage in talks, the U.S. envoy for North Korea said on Sunday. Libby Hogan of Reuters reports.
The U.S. envoy for North Korea once again urged Pyongyang on Sunday to engage in talks to denuclearize. Special Representative Sung Kim called Pyongyang's recent ballistic missile test concerning and counterproductive against lasting peace in the Korean Peninsula. But Pyongyang has so far rejected offers to return to the negotiating table, accusing Washington and Seoul of talking diplomacy while escalating tensions with their own military activities. On Thursday, the North said the United States was overreacting to a submarine-launched ballistic missile test that it called self-defensive. That launch was one of several in recent weeks violating UN sanctions imposed on North Korea. Kim reiterated that Washington had no hostile intent towards the North, while his counterpart in Seoul, No Kyu Duk, said they had what he called a serious discussion of Seoul's proposal to formally declare an end to the Korean War. The 1950 to 1953 Korean War ended in an armistice rather than a peace treaty. South Korean officials see such a declaration as a gesture of goodwill to get talks started.
That's Libby Hogan of Reuters. Turkey is facing diplomatic pushback after President Recep Tayyip Erdogan called for the expulsion of 10 ambassadors, including U.S. ambassador. The envoys had called for the release of a jailed civil society leader. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
The Netherlands, Denmark and Norway all issued statements saying they remain committed to defending human rights in Turkey, while the United States and Germany said they were seeking clarification. The countries are among 10 whose ambassadors Erdogan Saturday declared persona non grata, a diplomatic term used to expel a person. The Turkish president condemned the ambassadors for their rare joint statement, calling for the release of the Turkish philanthropist Osman Kavala, a move Erdogan condemned as interference in Turkey's affairs.
Zira bunlar Türkiye'yi tanıyacaklar.
Erdogan said they will know and understand Turkey. The day they do not know and understand Turkey, they will leave. Kavala is one of Turkey's most prominent civil society supporters and a critic of Erdogan. He's accused of seeking to overthrow Erdogan by funding the 2016 coup attempt and 2013 civil unrest. He's been in jail for 4 years but has not been convicted and denies all charges against him. The Turkish president claims he's defending Turkey's independence, a stance some observers say plays well with his nationalist voting base. Presidential elections have to be held by 2023. Political columnist İlhan Özgel of Devar News Portal says Erdogan could be using tough diplomacy to divert public attention from a plummeting currency and looming economic crisis.
Erdogan is losing his popularity because the economic conditions are terrible. But if Erdogan has problems with the United States, it works for the nationalist voters. And he may accuse the opposition that they're collaborating with foreign powers and with CIA, etc., with Washington, to topple him.
None of the 10 ambassadors have so far received formal notification they've been declared persona non grata. Observers say it remains to be seen whether Erdogan is ready to carry out the diplomatic expulsions, a move that could further exacerbate the country's financial woes and isolation from its traditional Western allies. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
Afghan women leaders are calling on United Nations member countries to pressure the Taliban to keep their promises and allow women to work and girls to study. As VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sen reports, girls are still banned from secondary schools under Taliban rule in Afghanistan.
Let girls learn. That was the demand of Afghan women leaders living in exile who spoke at the United Nations this week. Nahid Farid is a former member of the Afghan parliament.
Today marks the 34th day that Afghan girls banned from attending secondary school. Extrajudicial killings, public executions, ethnic cleansing, molestation, mass killings takes place in Afghanistan as we speak.
Ever since the Taliban took back power in Afghanistan in late August, Afghan women have been taking to the streets, demanding the Islamist group allow them back into the workplace and let girls return to school as promised. So far, the Taliban is only letting a very limited number of women work, such as some midwives and nurses, and have said they will let girls return to school in accordance with Sharia law. Tariq Ahmed of Wimbledon is a special representative for the United Kingdom.
So let me address the Taliban quite directly. Islam provides for women's rights. It does not deny it. Islam provides for education for all, not just for boys, but for girls. Islam talks of empowerment of all communities, protection of minorities, not the suppression of them.
Afghan women want a seat at the table, Asila Wardak of the Afghan Women's Network says.
Please do not talk about me in these discussions. Create spaces for me and other Afghan women leaders to talk directly with the Taliban. This is how you meaningfully include women in peace process and peace and security process as well as humanitarian assistance projects. Give us a seat at the table. Do not put us into the corridor.
At the United Nations, several Afghan women leaders warned of the dire humanitarian situation in their homeland and said women should not just be beneficiaries of aid, but also leaders in distribution. Fawzia Kufi is a former member of the Afghan parliament.
It is imperative that the UN demand the protection and inclusion of Afghan women in every stage of aid and humanitarian aid distribution, from planning to implementation and being the recipients.
For now, girls are only allowed to attend primary school in Afghanistan, and in many cases, teachers have not been paid their salary in 2 months. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
This is the Voice of America. Amnesty International will close its 2 offices in Hong Kong this year, becoming the latest non-governmental organization to cease operations amid a crackdown on political dissent in the city. An Amnesty official said Hong Kong's national security law has made it effectively impossible for organizations to work freely without fear of serious reprisals. Hong Kong implemented the sweeping law in 2020, and more than 120 people have been arrested. Several Chinese provinces and cities said they'll start giving COVID-19 vaccines to children as young as 3, after already fully vaccinating 76% of the population. The expansion of its vaccination campaign comes as parts of China take new clampdown measures to try to stamp out small outbreaks. China maintains a zero-tolerance policy towards the pandemic, using lockdowns, quarantines, and compulsory testing to eliminate the virus. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. 46 countries and the European Union have adopted a legally binding mechanism under the so-called Aarhus Convention to protect environmental defenders who risk abuse and harm because of their work. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The Aarhus Convention was adopted in 1998 in the Danish city of Aarhus under the auspices of the United Nations Economic Commission for Europe. It is the only global legally binding treaty linking environmental and human rights concerns. However, UN officials say many of the rights guaranteed under the treaty are being violated. In recent years, UNECE Executive Secretary Olga Algayerova says there have been many reports of these rights not being honored.
We have seen an increasing trend of environmental defenders living under the threat of retaliation and in the fear for their lives, especially in cases where they speak out against spatial planning and large-scale infrastructural projects. No one should live in fear for standing up for the environment and where they live.
The UNECE says environmental defenders have been threatened, harassed, intimidated, and even killed because of protest actions against the construction of a dangerous dam, harmful agricultural practices, and other environmentally destructive projects. The new agreement establishes a post for a special rapporteur on environmental defenders. The official will be able to provide a rapid response to alleged violations as stipulated under the Aarhus Convention. Special rapporteur on the situation of human rights defenders, Mary Lawler, says the creation of this rapid response mechanism could be of enormous benefit to environmental defenders.
As I outlined in my report to the Human Rights Council earlier this year, 50% of the human rights defenders killed, as recorded by OHCHR in 2019, had been working with communities around issues of land, environment, impacts of business activity, poverty and rights of Indigenous peoples, Afro-descendants, and other minorities.
A report by Global Witness last year found of the more than 300 human rights defenders who were killed, 70% were environmental defenders. The new agreement outlines the various tools available to the special rapporteur for resolving complaints and protecting environmental defenders quickly and effectively. They include issuing immediate protection measures, using diplomatic channels, releasing public statements, and bringing urgent cases to relevant human rights bodies for action. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For the first time in a laboratory, Australian scientists have produced tadpoles more tolerant of climate change. A team from the University of Western Australia has crossbred frogs from wetter regions with other species from drier areas to make them more resilient. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Researchers in Australia want to give nature a helping hand. They've warned that climate change poses an enormous threat to many of the world's frogs. Genetic traits that allow a type of amphibian called a crawling frog to survive in regions with lower rainfall, researchers say, could be passed on through breeding. They've mixed frogs from drier parts of southwestern Australia with others from wetter areas. Sperm and eggs from four different crawling frog populations that occur in areas with various levels of rainfall were used in the experiment. The effort produced tadpoles that were better adapted to climate change and had increased tolerance to dry conditions. The world's first laboratory trial has been reported in the journal Communications Biology. Jody Rowley is a lead scientist at the Australian Museum Citizen Science Project and an expert in amphibians. She believes that frogs need help to meet the challenges of global warming.
It does seem a little bit like we're acting God in some ways, but I think at this point it's some of the only ways that we're going to be able to have these amazing frogs in the future. The times of just leaving things alone to be protected in these areas is not going to work anymore. You know, climate change is moving faster than the frogs are able to adapt themselves. So we're going to have to do things like potentially move animals from one place to the other, or in this case, give them a little genetic advantage to allow them to be able to persist in this new world that they're going to be living in.
The University of Western Australia team said that more trials would be needed before these crossbreeding techniques could be applied in the wild to reduce the risk of species extinctions. Rainfall in southwestern Australia has declined in the past 40 years, and it's a trend that's expected to continue. The project to boost the climate resilience of crawling frogs was part of research by the Australian government's conservation initiative, Threatened Species Recovery Hub. It's examined ways to help at-risk species adapt to climate change. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney, Australia.
Researchers at a specialised lab in Italy say understanding climate change effects requires recreating them in a controlled environment, so they built one. VOA's Arash Rabasadi has more.
It wasn't long ago that rescue workers trained by climbing for hours, even days, to reach mountaintops to practice in extreme weather conditions. Today, they can do so in a lab.
In these rooms, we can reproduce environments from negative 40 degrees Celsius up to 60 degrees. In terms of altitude, we can go up to 9,000 meters. We combine wind, snow, and rain, and we have an entire research department that studies these effects on people.
This is the Terex Cube Extreme Climate Simulation Center, a part of URAC Research. Here, scientists study the impact of altitude and extreme weather on participants' blood thickness and its ability to carry oxygen. Last year, the facility served as an incubator for mountain climbers Simone Morrow and Tamara Lunger.
They were acclimated in our room for about a month. They were slowly brought up to 7,000 meters altitude. They trained inside. We monitored them with researchers and doctors. The goal is always to understand how man behaves scientifically in a process of acclimatization.
The researchers also look at what happens to heavy machinery exposed to the same extreme climates. Sturer explains.
We did some defrosting tests on big machines. These are cabins where people have to be inside. The test was to understand how fast the glass can defrost.
He says that test measures the quality of the glass, which is essential for machinery operating in extreme temperatures. Terex Cube received national accreditation to carry out climate tests not only on objects, but also on living beings. The URAC Research Center has more than 400 scientists, and officials say collaborating to understand the effects of climate change may be its most important work. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Australia plans to crack down on online advertisers targeting children by making social media platforms seek parental consent for users younger than 16 years old to join or face fines of $7.5 million under a new draft law. A government statement says the landmark legislation released Monday would protect Australians online and ensure that Australians' privacy laws are appropriate in the digital age. Social media platforms will be required to take all responsible steps to verify their users' ages. The platform would have to give primary consideration to the best interests of children when handling their personal information. Facebook says it's reviewing the proposed law. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a pleasant evening.